Thank you very much and good evening. I have to start this by saying that this is probably the most challenging topic I have ever been given in something like over 45 years of standing up and making speeches of one form or another. It wasn't aided by my friend Francis here whispering to me, gee, you got the short end of the stick, or words to that effect. Now, obviously in 20 minutes I'm not going to attempt to present a scholarly paper on this topic. I couldn't even if I wanted to. But what I am going to speak to you about is the experience from the perspective of a woman in the church, someone who has worked for, with and in the Catholic Church as a paid employee for nearly 50 years. I started as a teacher, moved to principalship and am now a bureaucrat. Several specific things have helped inform this presentation tonight. The first was attending that plenary consultation held in Sydney in September, and another was a staff meeting at the Catholic Education Office in Sale, where, as you have been told, I am the director. And also in the lead-up to this evening, I found myself reading anything and everything that came out about happenings in the Catholic Church in recent times. Now, these have included, but not been limited to, the debates on same-sex marriage, the euthanasia bill, funding for Catholic schools, obviously something of great interest and concern for me, and, of course, the Royal Commission. And I have read all of these through the lens of what I was going to need to do tonight. I worked for 18 years in the Catholic Education Office in Melbourne, and for all of that time was involved in varying ways, shapes and forms with issues of professional standards, which of necessity included issues of professional misconduct involving lay and religious staff in schools, and due to my connection with the Melbourne response, clergy as well. Now, while the Royal Commission has been focusing very much on the criminal issues of, obviously, criminal child abuse, quite an amount of my work dealt with the other side that was not criminal. The sexual harassment, the bullying, the adult boundary violations, which you don't hear about in Royal Commissions, but equally speak of the dysfunction and, as Francis has mentioned, those issues of power and authority. So the Victorian Parliamentary Inquiry and the Royal Commission have been issues of intense interest for me even after leaving Melbourne for the Sale Diocese, where as director I now sit on the Professional Standards Committee of the Diocese and manage the role of the relatively newly appointed Professional Standards Officer for the Diocese. I also remain on the Professional Standards Advisory Committee for a religious congregation. Those events and experiences will of necessity inform my presentation, simply because this has been an overriding experience of church for me in the last 25 years. Now, whilst this has been a very dark and negative time in our church, I believe, and Francis has expressed very, very well and in a very learned way, that we have to learn a lot from that experience. But I've felt all along that if we leave it for a Royal Commission to tell us what to do, when and how, then we really seriously have lost the plot. The part that has concerned me so much is hearing, well, we'll wait until the Royal Commission brings this out, or we'll wait for the Royal Commission to tell us about this. So it's a concern that I have, while I know that it was necessary and the learnings are deep. I really still believe we need to be looking at this and many of these things before the Royal Commission hands down the findings. As I will reference at various points tonight, historical child abuse and other forms of serious clergy ministerial misconduct are not the only areas of dysfunction we need to address as a church. I'm going to try to make my focus this evening not solely or even significantly on those matters, but with some sort of a vision for the future around a church that is collaborative and prepared to engage in a process that authentically considers what shared leadership might look like, what its advantages may be, and also what the pitfalls might need to be considered before required changes are attempted. We have an ageing population of church attenders, fewer young people interested in engaging or taking on leadership, staffing Catholic schools with teachers committed to ensuring the Catholicity of our schools, and the missing generations, those in the 35 to 60 age group, are some of the issues that I see here. I attended the plenary consultation in Sydney last month somewhat reluctantly, but I believed it was an event that I should be prepared to engage in, at least to go and listen. As it turned out, the concept of listening became a major feature of that consultation. Following that event, I decided if I was going to make any sort of fist of this tonight and to be true to my basic beliefs and to the topic, then I needed to engage in some sort of discussion with others so that I could legitimately say that this was not a solitary exercise, but something undertaken in collaboration with others who hold an interest in what happens to us as a church. If I was to speak about a collaborative church, then I'd at least try to model that. Now, as luck would have it, we were to have a Catholic Education Office sales staff seminar just prior to my departure for an overseas holiday. I got back less than 24 hours ago. Okay? Any mistakes I make tonight, jet lag. But part of my address to the staff, which centres on a new governance model for Catholic education in the Diocese of Sale, which is pertinent to this evening as well, I gave them an outline of what I was being asked to do here, and I begged for some views, ideas, suggestions and thoughts. I have to say I was delighted and quite overwhelmed by the responses, by the number of staff who wanted to assist, the trouble some of them went to, including groups meeting over lunch to put some common thoughts on paper, and going home to their teenage sons and daughters to seek some input. I will admit that both throughout and on reflection, the plenary consultation was a disappointment to me, which is not to say I'm sorry I went, but rather to say, in the words of one of my staff, when commenting on what might change or should change, same old, same old. Now, the plenary consultation was by invitation. A number of you were probably there, and I mean no disrespect to anyone, I was there. 150 had accepted and it was a full house. But the question I had to ask was, but a full house of whom? I was somewhat disappointed at my perception of the demographics of the group. And as I say, I mean no disrespect at all to the many committed people who were there. But they were people just like me, and just like those I have been consorting with one way or another for decades. I appreciated there had to be a starting point, but I questioned the invitation list. What I was quite worried to hear, though, as the floor was opened up for feedback after each of the presentations, were comments such as, tell us what the not negotiables are. Tell us what we can't talk about at the plenary. I was disappointed to hear the same things coming up, and I know they are important. Clericalism, the role of women or lack thereof, and the one I found most frustrating of all, which now has an acronym, CLM, Career Limiting Move. In my day, it used to be called career suicide, and I know all about that. I risked committing it several times. Now, when I heard those comments, what I heard from the group was frustration, fear, and worst of all, the acceptance of limits before we even started on the journey. I reference what Francis said before he finished about what we need to be looking at in this plenary. I want to make it clear that I'm not saying that those issues are not important. Of course they are. But if that's all the agenda of the plenary is going to be about, we might as well forget it. If that's what the agenda for a focus on shared leadership in a collaborative church is all about, then we might as well not bother. We must go deeper than that. A healthy church moving forward is going to be led by a mix of people from all groups that go to make up the church. Led by. Not just lip service being paid to the word leadership, but real involvement in real decision making. One of the articles that I read was Archbishop Mark Coleridge on his return from the Vatican, and the role of women obviously was discussed there, etc. And I just read that and I thought, how many times does this need to be said before it's actually acted on? And why does it take a secular commission to remind us of this? Consider this. At the Royal Commission, the important role of women was espoused at one of the hearings, and how much progress had been made in one particular diocese at least, etc., etc. Then, not 2 weeks later, a panel to discuss governance in Catholic education, where some 74% of the staff are women, consisted of 4 men. I sat through that session wondering, does anybody get the irony in this? I was heartened, Bishop Long, to read your comments on the end of the elitist clericalism. Most encouraging to read, but fundamental changes at the level of the selection for the priesthood and seminary training models must be explored deeply before this will become a reality. Back to shared collaborative leadership. This requires a realistic understanding of the parameters of decision making, both as it exists at the moment and how we might envisage it happening in the future. To my mind and in my experience, this requires a focus on process that can be lengthy and must involve teams of people, not just in discussion, but in that beautiful word, discernment. More discussion if needed, more discernment if necessary, leading to an agreed decision and then implementation. Those with designated authority, and let's please be realistic here, someone has to ultimately be in charge, even if it's only to have someone to blame. But those with that ultimate responsibility to give final assent and manage implementation must be prepared to give sound reasons for not implementing the discerned decision of whatever process has occurred. That's the transparency that Francis also was talking about. Now, I believe that it has been that experience of consultation that went nowhere that led to the comments at the plenary consultation about not negotiables. People were saying, don't waste my time saying anything can be discussed when it can't be, when nothing will change. If it's the same old, and worse, if I speak up and say what I really think or who I really am, my job, my career, my prospects, my credibility will be on the line, or worse, actually at risk. In a model of collaboration rather than consultation, those involved in the decision-making and the implementation will be accountable in a real sense for both the decisions and the implementation or otherwise of those decisions. Now, I have a few slides. Do I have time to get through a few slides? Good. Where I'm really trying to put together, I would not call them principles. They are too unformed yet to be called principles, but what I would say, some concepts that I think we need to consider. The things I'd like to talk briefly about are collaboration rather than consultation, influence rather than power, inclusion, not exclusion, testing the waters versus the tried and true, and helping the best people to find us instead of finding the right people. Some of these quotes are taken. If they are in italics, they are generally from someone, a proverb, the Pope, or, as it says there, William Pollard. If they are in ordinary type, they are quotes that have come from staff at the Catholic Education Office. When I'm talking about collaboration instead of consultation, I think we need to understand that the two words are not synonymous. And if we're going to think in terms of a collaborative church, we need to understand the difference. Anyone who has been in leadership for more than 5 minutes knows that you can make a show of consultation and then do precisely what you decided you were going to do in the first place. One may feel compelled to consult for the sake of show, but not feel in any way compelled to take notice of what comes out of that consultation. Collaboration is another beast entirely. It speaks of profound and deep engagement. Collaboration has an intimacy about it. There is a sense of togetherness in the word. The image that springs to mind for me is of a huddle of people with the purpose of getting the best possible outcome for all and prepared to remain in the huddle until that occurs, despite discomfort, disagreement and dispute. There is a fearlessness required for collaboration that does not exist in consultation. I'd rather talk in terms of influence rather than power. I do get a bit antsy when people talk about power and authority in a new model. We've been there, done that, where power and authority is concerned. It's fruitless to set up different models where we still speak the same language of control and submission. A quick story, a number of years ago when I was still working for the Catholic Education Office, one of my senior colleagues resigned unexpectedly, and I was asked to take over part of the management of his staff, and they were just about to put forward to the executive of the office a very important piece of work, and there was a bit of to-ing and fro-ing and argy-bargy about whether it would get through. And the staff were quite delighted that they'd got me, and they said to me, "At last we have someone with power on the executive." And I remember saying to them, "I don't have power. What I have is influence. And if you asked me what would I prefer, I'd prefer influence any day of the week and twice on Sundays." I believe our church is being led by a man who prefers influence to power, but is up against a bureaucracy that prefers power and authority over everything else. Most bureaucracies are like that, which is why even the most dysfunctional and disgraceful of them survive. That's the cultural norm. As church, surely we are meant to be countercultural in all aspects of our functioning. The groups and organisations within our church must be open to the influence of the other. A few quotes there around exclusion rather than exclusion. Inclusion, this needs to be an absolute. Not just the inclusion of those who are deemed safe and exclusion of those who are thought to be trouble. Those quotes there, install an equal number of male-female representatives in the church hierarchy. That just came straight out of one of the staff at the office. And as you can see, there are two quotes from Pope Francis in terms of his views of inclusion. It really doesn't mean limited inclusion or useful inclusion. It cannot mean the token female, the token young person, the token gay, the token married person. I've been the token woman in so many situations, it's not funny. Collaboration immediately falls apart if we ignore the concept of authentic, honest, dare I say even, dangerous inclusion. Testing the waters instead of relying on the tried and true. Quotes there from staff, open and transparent appointment processes for all positions rather than tapping on the shoulder process that so often occurs. And gender is not the only area of inequality when it comes to the imbalance of representation. Every committee, board, team, organisation needs reliable, sensible, focused, appropriately skilled personnel. Every committee, board, team, organisation needs people who think outside the square, who don't fit the profile we have in our head of the ideal. Every one of the above needs people in training, not people being brainwashed into the prevailing culture. They must be people who know who they are and know they have something to offer. How many times have you been told when joining a group or an organisation, "This is how things are done here, we do it this way"? The biggest battles of my career have been around being told, "No, Maria, we don't do it that way here," and then setting out to make sure that that changed. And helping the best people find us rather than looking for the right people. You know, to do that, we must project an image of ourselves that says we are committed to collaboration. We are open to the influence of outsiders, of others. We have a commitment, not just a willingness to inclusion. We have a commitment to training and being trained by others. In the words of Pope Francis again, and it's important here to note that in any discussion about a proposed venture, a number of questions need to be asked in order to discern, that beautiful word, whether or not it will contribute to general integral development. What will it accomplish? Why, where, when, how, for whom, what are the risks, what are the costs, who will pay those costs and how? And I want to finish with a quote from one of my staff that was related to a conversation we were having about the new governance model for Catholic education in the Diocese of Sale, where the priests have signed over full responsibility for the schools to a company limited by guarantee and a board of directors. And this very wise staff member said to me, real change will only occur when those who have authority are prepared to make decisions that are against their own best interests. Thank you.